Good morning, everyone. It's lovely to see every one of you here this morning. You are welcome here, wherever you are on life's journey, wherever you are emotionally, wherever you are with the joys and celebrations or struggles and concerns of your life, you are welcome here. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in the first hymn, Siyayamba, 1030 in the Teal Hymnal. And this is a South African freedom song that was written in 1950 by Christian Anders von Tonder. And some of the words are in Zulu, and we're going to sing those words, even though it may be a struggle, out of respect from the culture that this song comes from. And we will also sing the English. And this is a song of joy and celebration, even amidst the struggle of apartheid when it was written. Singing! Keep going.
Singing in the light of God. We are 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 singing. We are singing. We are singing in the light of God. We are singing.
Dancing.
We are dancing in the light of God. 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 We are dancing.
walking.
Walking in the light of God. We are walking in the light of God. We are walking in the light of God. We are walking in the light of God.
Loving.
Loving in the light of God. We are 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 loving. We are loving in the light of God. We are loving. We are loving in the light of God.
Thank you.
Diana Wilbur will light our chalice this morning. Please join me in saying our chalice lighting words in the back of the gray hymnal, number 448. 448. We gather this hour as people of faith with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs, we light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of the life we share together. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Christy Bordine, and I am this morning's lay worship leader. We are so glad that you're here. We want you to know that in all your wholeness and uniqueness, you are enough. We all have different gifts and needs, and your gifts and needs are important here. I want to give a special welcome to our first time and returning visitors. After the service, please be sure to join us for refreshments and conversation in the community room, which is out the door and to the left. We want to get to know you better and answer any questions you may have. Please join me in responsive reading again in the gray hymnal, number 664. I'll read the words in normal print, and you'll read the words in italic print. Give us the spirit of a child. Give us the child who lives within.
The child who trusts. The child who imagines. The child who sings.
The child who receives without reservation. The child who gives without judgment. Give us a child's eyes that we may receive the beauty and freshness of this day like a sunrise. Give us a child's ears that we may hear the music of mythical times.
Give us a child's heart
that we may be filled with wonder and delight. Give us a child's faith that we may be cured of our cynicism.
Give us the spirit of the child who is not afraid to need, who is not afraid to love.
Let's take a moment to welcome the people sitting near us, especially those you don't know well.
Hello there, welcome. I'm Brian, thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Dee Adams, and I'm a member of the Board of Trustees at Wildflower. And at Wildflower Church, we live into our mission, and that is share it with me, growing spiritually together, spreading love, justice, and joy. I want to mention some justice initiatives at Wildflower. And, you know, the rain really got me into the spirit of this first one. Wasn't that absolutely wonderful, the rain this morning? Woo! Something to celebrate. So one of the ways that we engage in our neighborhood justice initiatives is our work with our house youth programs to serve students and families in our South Austin neighborhood. Join Sky and I this Saturday, this coming Saturday at 9 o'clock across the road. And what's going to happen is that we're going to get the Travis High School grounds ready for the students to return. And so we really need, this is a community effort. There are other parts of the community that are come together and be really great for us to just meander across the street and have our clippers and our gloves and whatever else. So if you have any questions, please email Sky Howell, and I think her contact information is in the insert. The other justice initiative that is happening, and you'll see them present in the Wildflower Community Room across the way when you go there after fellowship hour. And for the next few Sundays, they're going to be talking, the WAIT team, or officially the Wildflowers Austin Interfaith team, is going to be talking about the initiatives that the Austin Interfaith has come up with by listening to people in the community, and they have an agenda for this year, particularly focused on having candidates who support that agenda that we're going to encourage us to vote for those candidates, and of course we know that we have this important election coming up in November. So the areas that they're including is immigration reform, living wages, affordable housing, good public schools, sustainability, workforce development, and more. And there'll be forums and ways for you to really understand how the candidates are coming down on those issues. So talk to the WAIT folks over the next few weeks on Sunday morning. And then if you want to be involved in shaping Wildflower's justice ministry as we move into this next couple of years, join us in Classroom 2 at 1:15 today. And now the last and the most special is our Serenity Service, and that's going to happen on Friday. It is a wonderful, it happens every third Friday of the month. And it's a wonderful opportunity to engage in being really led into quiet and reflection and have an opportunity to have music and candlelight and some beautiful readings. And so Mike Montgomery is going to be the violinist, the Serenity Service. He's over there. You might remember him fiddling. Well, he has a great repertoire. And so he's going to do a lovely Avo Pärt rendition of a meditation and a Bach sonata. So you will, don't miss that. It's a wonderful experience and great way to end your week. Lynn Whittington, whose birthday it actually is today, yay Lynn, is going to be reading, so don't miss that experience.
I'd like to invite people of all ages forward for the time for all ages. Good morning, everyone. Hi, Willie.
Hi.
You're very close. Not that that's a bad thing. Hello, everyone. Well, you just heard Miss D talk about our mission statement, which is growing spiritually together, spreading love, justice, and joy. And I want to talk a few minutes about that because that's kind of complex. And when we talk about growing spiritually together, what do you think we mean by that? You got an answer? Anyone got an answer? Yeah, no, it's complex. Well, I think what it means to me is, like, as a community, we are trying to just become better people. We're trying to become kinder. We're trying to become more generous. We're trying to become more thoughtful, more compassionate. And when we talk about growing spiritually together, that's what we're trying to help each of us become, each of those things and other things. I mean, are there things you would like to grow about yourself? Other than your height, you're all probably got that done. I think I'm done growing, but you lot have probably got a bit of growing to still do. Is there things, ways you'd like to grow? No, you're all perfect.
Someday I'll be right here and I can touch your head.
Someday you'll be able to touch my head, that's true. I could be sitting down. Well, the other thing we have is spreading love, justice, and joy. And that all sounds really good because we all think love is good and justice is good and joy is good. But we have to remember sometimes those things can become in conflict with each other. Not everything, you know, is joyful can be just, and not everything that can be loving is joyful. I mean, and that may sound strange, so I want to tell you a story to demonstrate this. And this story is about one of my favorite animals, the mole. Does anyone know the mole? It kind of lives underground, and it's really quite cute, though some people don't think so, but I think they're quite cute. And it lives underground. Well, this is a story of a young mole, you know, probably about your age. And
what's a mole?
A mole, it's an animal that lives underground. It's a mammal. It's kind of hairy animal. Doesn't look. You know what a mammal is. It doesn't look, it's about the size of a kind of otter type animal, if you know what that is. And so the mole lives underground, but what this mole finds, this young mole finds this little baby bird that's fallen out the nest, and he thinks the baby bird's going to die. So but he really likes the baby bird, so he takes it, and he takes it underground to where the moles live, and he looks after it. And the mole's parents see it and said, oh, I don't think that bird's going to live. And he said, well, I love that bird. I'm going to really take good care of it and try and restore it. So it would try and feed the bird, and it would hold the bird so that the bird was warm. And eventually the bird started to recover. And the parents looked at him and said, well, you're really taking good care of that bird that might grow. And the bird started growing and growing as it ate more and more. But eventually the bird started wanting, what do birds do? What do most birds do? They want to fly. And the bird couldn't really fly underground. And then the mole realized that if he took the bird out of the underground home, that the bird might fly away. And he loved the bird so much, he didn't want the bird to do that. So guess what he ended up doing? He ended up getting this wood, and he built this little cage for the bird so the bird couldn't escape. And you know, the bird was starting to look a bit sad. The bird had been happy, but this bird wanted to fly because that's what birds are for. They're just driven to do it. And the parent said, you know, you should really let, the parent said to the little mole, you should really let that bird go because birds are meant to fly. He goes, no, I love that bird, and if I let it out the cage, it's going to fly away, and I'll lose it, and I don't want to lose something I love. And so they said, well, we think that's cruel, but you should really let that bird go. Eventually, one of the grandparents came, and he looked at the bird and looked at the little mole and said, come on for a walk. And so they went for a walk, and he went up to the top of this hill, and they were at the very top of this hill, and they were looking around the grandparent and the mole, and they saw birds flying over them. And then the grandparent said, let's go running and pretend we're birds and we can fly. I saw them running, the little mole and the grandparent were running, flapping their arms and trying and pretending to fly. And then the little mole thought about this and thought, I felt like I was flying. That was such an elated feeling. That was such a joyous feeling. I maybe need to let that bird go, because that's how that bird would feel if it flew. I love that bird so much, but I really need to let it go. So I went in, and he opened the cage, and he took the bird out, and the bird went flying off, circled around him twice, and then flew away. And the mole started crying. But he knew he had done the right thing. He had given this bird its freedom. He did the more loving thing. Because even though he loved the bird, he knew that the best thing he could do for that bird was let it free and let it live a joyous life. And sometimes we have to make these hard decisions about things where it's kind of a conflict, where we know what we love, but we know what other people love. And one of the things that we're always trying to look at this community is how can we bring more love for all people into this world and all animals into this world. So thank you so much for listening. It's time to go with Miss Piaf for the Children's Religious Education. It's nice to have you back, Piaf.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For this and commit together to ensure the funds we gather collectively do a greater good for ourselves and our world than we could have done alone. May there be an offering to sustain and grow the life and mission of this congregation. May we give in love and in hope. Please give as generously as you are able. If you are visiting with us for the first time today, please let the plate pass you by as your presence here is gift enough. The offering will now be given, and thank you for your generosity.
Thank you.
I invite you now to join me in the spirit of prayer and meditation and reflection. These are the words of Unitarian Universalist minister Vanessa Southern. So much is undone. So much to do. So much to heal in ourselves and our world. So much to acquire. A meal, a healthy body, a fit one, a lover, a job, a better job. Proof we have and are enough. Just around the corner of now. And up against it, reality of all that falls short and the limits of today. We honor those limits. If your body won't do what it used to for right now, let it be enough. If your mind won't stop racing or can't think of the word, let it be enough. If you are here utterly alone and in despair, be all that here with us now. If you cannot sing because your throat hurts or you don't have the heart for music, be silent. The world won't stop spinning on her axis if you don't rise to all the occasions presented to you today. Love won't cease to flow in your direction. Your heart won't stop beating. All hope won't be lost. You are part of the plan for the world's salvation. Of that, I have no doubt. The world needs its oceans of people striving to be good, to be kind, to be compassionate, to carry us to the shores of hope and wash fear from the beachheads and cleanse all of our wounds so they may heal. But oceans are big. And I'm sure there are parts that don't feel up to the task of the whole some days. Rest, if you must. Then, like the swimmer lying on the back who floats, or the hawk carried on the cushions of air, rest in the pews. Rest in the pews made to hold weary lives in space carved out for the doing of nothing but being. Perhaps then you will feel in your bones, in your weary heart, the aching, healing sense that this is enough. Even this. That we are enough, you are enough, we all are enough. I invite you to join me in silence. Blessed be, and amen. Please rise in body or spirit for our next hymn, 1029 in the Teal Hymnal. Love knocks and waits for us to hear. And this was written by a Methodist, Daniel Denham. It's inspired by Christian scripture, but the song reminds us that love does not barge in unwanted. Love needs to be invited in by us. 1029.
When I was 19, I went with a doctor, a dentist, and a bunch of nursing students to San Pedro Sula, Honduras. Our mission was to provide medical services to a small community of people living in poverty at a cement block building at the top of a hill with no running water or electricity for 4 days. My job was to hold the flashlight for the dentist, but I was demoted to waiting room helper after I made a sound during a particularly brutal molar extraction. I spent the rest of my time translating for the doctor and talking with people who were waiting in the absurdly long line wrapped around the building. The cliche is absolutely true. Spending time in that community changed my worldview permanently. It undermined my ethnocentrism and forced me to see that children raised next to the Rio Negro, named for the sewage, were loved and precious and beloved by their parents as much as any I'd known. And it showed me a world with no safeguards for the poor, which is intolerable. About 10 years later, I was talking to a friend who worked at an international medical NGO, and she gently prodded my thoughts to a more critical view of my experience. For the first time, I learned the phrase white savior, which is Western people parachuting in to fix the problems of struggling nations of people of color without understanding their history, needs, or the region's current state of affairs. My best estimate is that we spent $20,000 to $30,000 in total on flights and hotel rooms in Honduras. That's enough to pay for a Honduran doctor to work in that community for a year, a doctor who could speak the language and make follow-up visits. Doctors Without Borders treats thousands of Hondurans in an ongoing collaboration with the Honduran Ministry of Health and has been working there since 1974. They understand the physical and psychological needs of the people they serve, and they hire nationals. That's the organization I'll join the next time I go to Honduras. international or local, just because a nonprofit has a virtuous mission statement does not mean they're the most effective. Checking charitynavigator.com or the like helps me feel confident that my money is really doing the most good. My charitable giving now flows through Wildflower, and I have trust that the people of this church can amplify my money to truly make a difference in our community, and that the various Wildflower justice and outreach teams know the history and needs and current state of affairs in Austin. I know that sometimes trying to help is messy. Sometimes someone doesn't want my help, and I'm overbearing. Or I help in the wrong way, or I'm tone deaf to the actual need that people are experiencing. Being a human is bumbling and messy, so I'll keep working on listening more, apologizing when appropriate, and promising to do better the next time.
I'd like to thank Sitha for blessing us with her music this morning, and I'd like to thank Elke as well. So thank you. In fact, I'm feeling generous this morning, so I'm going to give Sitha some money because it's about charity. So I'll give you $5 for playing today. Thank you. And Christy, your reflection was really good, so I'm only going to give you $1 because I liked her best. Okay. And Elke, your piano playing, it's okay. It's great. But I'm not going to give you anything. That's unjust. Now that, apart from my bad acting and my rudeness, when we are talking about charity, we are talking about these benevolent gifts that we give to people that we think who are in need or who we think are deserving of it. And most of the time we can do that in the comfort of our own home with our partner looking at a bank account. But so often we're confronted in a day-to-day living with homelessness. And we have to make that decision, who's deserving of money and who's not. Of course, Elkie's deserving of money. But we have to make that decision every time. And it really challenges us about charity. Like, who is deserving of it? I mean, there used to be a time, I even remember when I was growing up, that was a long time ago, that usually if you saw someone asking for money, there was almost an inherent trust that they were deserving on it, they fell in hardship. But in the course of the 1980s, 90s, 2000s, I think many of us have become skeptical now. Is this person a con person? Is this person really deserving? Or maybe they're deserving, but it's just going to go to drugs or alcohol. And we have all this dialogue that goes on in our heads. And yet, we also have this pressure, we often feel shamed. We always feel embarrassed. We often feel guilted into giving money to people who may or may not be deserving it. So charities become very complex, and we're often faced with that in a day-to-day living. And I had to deal very specifically with this many years ago. Before moving to Austin, I lived in San Francisco. And San Francisco had a huge homeless problem. And I lived in a neighborhood, and about a block from my house was this cafe that I liked to go to for my coffee. And, it's a big community place, and I really liked it. And then all of a sudden, this probably early 60s older man started sitting outside, who was obviously in distress, I suspect homeless. And starting going there for my cappuccino, I think it was $2.50 at the time, that's dating myself. And I started to feel guilty, walking by this person, because he looked fairly fit and healthy, but he had that weathered look of someone who spent a lot of time outdoors. And I used to have this kind of wrestling, what should I do? And I had made, after about 3 or 4 years in San Francisco, I decided I'm not giving any money on the street. I made that decision. But over the course, I started talking to this man. He had the sign saying, "We'll work for food," and he meant it. Because what he would do is, if one of the shopkeepers asked him to unload a van, he would do it and the shopkeeper would pay him. So he really did work when asked. And one of the things I kind of liked, his name was Charles, I got to know him, and there was never any superficial niceness about him. Sometimes the people who ask you for money, they often got this kind of fake niceness about it until you say no, and then they start yelling at you. There was none of that with him. He said, "Have you got any money?" "No." "Okay." It was very abrupt. But then I started to say, I need to start buying him food, because what happened, it was really tragic. He had been working really hard, but then he suffered a stroke. And I hadn't seen him for 3 or 4 weeks, and I was worried. And he suffered this stroke, and he'd almost lost the use of his right leg, and he would walk dragging this leg behind him. It was the most pitiful, heartbreaking sight I've seen. This person whose leg no longer functioned, and he was still trying to walk. And that was at the point I decided I would start buying him food. And I remember I was with my partner, Natalie, and we were out walking. We saw him, and he asked us if we could buy him some food. So we went in, and I said, "Well, what would you like?" And he goes, "Well, what turkey sandwich? White bread. Don't like that wheat bread." Well, okay. Told you, no superficial friendliness. And then he grabbed a half gallon of milk and a bag of cookies. And so I paid for it, and he left. And he said thank you and wandered off. It wasn't an effusive thank you. I was kind of looking for something more. And then we were walking away. I said to Natalie, "I can't believe I offered to buy him a sandwich, and he went and got those milk and cookies." Natalie turned to me, my partner, and said, I think everyone deserves milk and cookies when they want them. Oh. Everyone does deserve milk and cookies when they want them. And I realized the bounds I was putting in my own compassion towards a person who was obviously in need, who was obviously in hardship. And I think there's so much in our life that really does challenge our compassion or puts limits on our compassion. And it's good to get reminded, you know, because what I had really forgotten about Charles in that moment was his humanity. It was like, here's a sandwich, that's what you need to sustain yourselves. But we human beings need so much more than just sustaining ourselves. We need to be loved, we need to be cared for, we need to be connected to. And in some small way, that milk and cookies connected, probably at a deeper level than the sustenance of the turkey sandwich and white bread. And I think about Charles a lot. I moved to Austin, you know, about 3 or 4 months after that incident, so I don't know what happened to him, but I'd be astonished if he was still alive. And I think we all have this experience in a home, whether you have homelessness in your neighborhood or whether it's when you're downtown. We have about 2 or 3 times a week people coming by the church looking for food. And while many of us maybe put bounds on money, we have these packets that our youth make for giving out to the homeless and giving them services. I think that's really important. But it's not enough just to give people that. And if you do give money, try and connect with the person. I would imagine many of the genuine people in need that you would find out when you communicate with them need so much more than money. They need that human connection that they've lost. And the San Francisco Unitarian Universalist Church used to have a shelter that they opened up for 6 weeks in the winter, where they would have 80 to 90 homeless men staying basically in the equivalent of the fellowship hall. And the San Francisco Unitarian Universalist Church is right on the edge of the Tenderloin, where it's a large percentage of homeless. And one of the things I remember we used to do, we used to give out packets there, and we used to have the children's choir sing, but we had the children give out the packets to people. And you should see how often the face, and it was homeless men here, of the homeless men who lightened up because people were willing to have their children have a conversation with them. Because all too often in the street, if a child who looks at this homeless person and sees something wrong, I've probably done it myself, the parents kind of rush them on. And we really encourage the children to connect with the men, because many of the men are parents. But charity's complex, as we were talking about there. We always have this judgment, this guilt, this embarrassment, this shame. And there's also this, we don't want to feel as a bad person. I think we all have an inherent generosity inside of us, but we also do not want to be taken advantage of. The Christian tradition, originally charity was about the love of God. And then through the Christian tradition over the course of 400 or 500 years, that became demonstrated by the love. You showed that love of God by being generous and kind to your fellow human being, who is made in the image of God. So by giving to your fellow human being, you are giving to God. But ultimately, what charity is, it is an act of love, which is shown through kindness and generosity. Now, we often have cautious about loving oneself, but I think that's a fundamental place to start. Because love of oneself is not a problem. It's if you only love yourself, it's a problem. If you are able to show that kindness and generosity of love of others, that can be a path to loving oneself. But we have a struggle with homelessness in Austin. And my partner, Natalie, who I mentioned earlier, She works at the Austin Resource Center for the Homeless. She's the outreach director there. And they've got some severe struggles with the homelessness, and it's increasing rapidly. And I know when I was the minister of San Marcos Church, we used to work once a month delivering dinners at the homeless shelter there. And we always took the time to get to know the people. Who are these homeless people there? And about 50% of the people in San Marcos were veterans. The people who had served in Iraq and Afghanistan. People often struggling with addiction and mental health. And there's something heartbreaking around that, where you realize that so many of our homeless are people who have served our country. And whether you agree with the war in Afghanistan or Iraq, these were people who served our country, who served the best interest of our government's policies, and then are discarded when they come back. And that breaks my heart. That is tragic, and that is wrong. So we want to spread love, justice, and joy. Charity can be a way to do it, but how do we do that in a way that's meaningful for the homeless? Right now in Austin, there's three ordinances that they're trying to bring in. I would say attacking the homeless. One is they're not allowed to panhandle now. They're not allowed to ask for money. They're not allowed to camp in public spaces. And they're not allowed to sit or lie in a place for longer than 30 minutes. Where is the humanity in those policies? Because a lot of those policies are designed for our comfort, not for the benefit of the homeless. That's designed for those of us who are not homeless, for our comfort. Because there's a discomfort being asked for money when you're at the ATM. I get that. There is a discomfort when you see rows of tents under the freeway and realize that's people's homes. And I was in Seattle just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they allow camping there, and in some of the blocks there is just tent by tent by tent for blocks with the homeless. And at first I was kind of a bit taken aback because you don't really see that in Austin. And then I realized that's really good. The homeless need to be visible. We need to be reminded of those who our society is neglecting. And those, if we really believe that we are our brother and sister's keeper, if we really do want to love our neighbor, we should be finding a way to care for them in a sustainable way. Because too often charity just sustains the system that keeps these people where they are. We need to find a way of charity that lifts people out of there. And I don't think it begins with banning people from living in tents or lying down and sleeping on a bench for more than 30 minutes or asking for money. That is all about our comfort. And I think we need to be prepared. If we are going to be the charitable people we desire, we need to find a way to get over our discomfort and find real solutions there. Because one of the critiques of charity is that it just keeps the system in place, and it's more about making ourselves feel good. We give to an organization for the homeless who's going to feed them. And I think that's where it comes down to the difference between social service and social justice. Social service can be feeding the homeless and the poor. Social justice is trying to find ways to lift them out of that and change things systemically so that there are fewer homeless. And there's an Argentinian Catholic bishop who says that when I feed the homeless, they call me a saint. When I ask why they're homeless, they call me a communist. Because our systems do not like to be critiqued, and I think charity can often be a way of distracting us from the real issues. And I think there's a place for both social service and social justice. Where social service, you get to meet the people you're serving, and social justice, and you find out their real needs. And social justice is where we work together to try and change those needs. But ultimately, charity needs to move beyond guilt and shame. It needs to be grounded in positive emotions. It really needs to be grounded in love and kindness and generosity. And I think this is where the Christian tradition has something that we can really learn from. The idea that the money, the gifts that we have, are gifts from God, are gifts from the universe. And it's for us to pass on to others. It's to use them for the benefit of others. It's God's money, not ours. Now, I want to caveat that slightly, because I have heard people in a previous congregation of mine saying they were told from a different tradition, they were from the Mormon tradition, if there's a choice between putting food on your table or giving the money to the church, you should give it to the church. Please don't. Feed yourself. That's important, because again, self-care allows us to care for others. But ultimately, we need to challenge ourselves and not get meshed in the emotions that prevent us being more charitable and being more generous. And I love to live by the mantra, I'd rather be kind than right, curious than judgmental, and generous rather than grudging. May we all find a way to be kind, generous, and curious. I invite you to rise in body or spirit for our final hymn Answering the Call of Love, 1014, 1014 in the hymnal. Just to give you a bit of information, it's called Standing in the Side of Love. There was a sermon I gave a couple of years ago where I asked you all to change to standing. We're trying to change it to standing to make it less ableist. And that was the request of the author, Jason Sheldon, who wrote it. And he actually wrote this hymn in tribute to our former president, Bill Singford, for his leadership in marriage equality. So 1014, Answering the Call of Love. Please remain standing. Everyone's invited to join us for refreshments in the community room. It would be lovely to see you all here, and I might get some of my money back. And if not, that's okay too. I'll try and be generous and charitable. But may each of us find a way to answer the call of love that speaks to us, to reach out to those that perhaps make us uncomfortable, that perhaps challenge us, perhaps we even don't like. But may we connect with them in their full humanity. May we connect with them with love and kindness and generosity, because that is at the core of religious traditions of charity. Go with love, go in love. Blessed be, and amen. Thank you.